Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Ken Williams. He shares his experience and expertise as a nationally recognized trainer, speaker, coach, and consultant in leadership and school culture. A practitioner for nearly two decades, Ken led the improvement efforts at two schools by leveraging the professional learning communities at work process. Skilled in joining the why of the work and the how of the work, Ken is known for his powerful and engaging combinations of heart, humor, and hammer. He is an expert at helping schools build capacity and the collective commitments required of learning for all cultures. Ken is a former principal of the Learning Academy at E.J. Swint in Jonesboro, Georgia, and Damascus Elementary School in Damascus, Maryland. His firsthand experience with transforming challenged schools translates into action-oriented presentations that inspire hope, create a clear vision, and offer practical strategies to those overwhelmed by challenges. He is the author of Starting a Movement, Building Culture from the Inside Out in Professional Learning Communities, Creating Physical and Emotional Safety in Schools, and a contributor to the Collaborative Administrator. Welcome to the podcast, Ken.
Thank you. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, thanks for being on. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Oh, my. Well, I've got a podcast of my own based on those very experiences. I cut my teeth in a very progressive, I would say pretty high performing school district. Had some of everything and all sorts of challenges, but kind of stayed on the cutting edge of what educators needed. There's no perfect school district. There's no perfect place, but this was a great place for me to cut my teeth as both a teacher and a leader. Mm-hmm. The day my wife and I discovered that we couldn't afford a modest single family home in that community, I don't know, that kind of ate at me for a while. And I decided we should move. And I had familiarity with the Atlanta area. I attended college here, applied to school districts. And I was blessed and grateful that one gave me a call. And when I was hired, I learned that I had inherited the lowest performing school in the district. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was the lowest performing district in the greater Atlanta area.
Wow.
And so, and there was a lot of dysfunction, I would say, at the board level. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of things going on, which created somewhat of a trench. And so I went from a situation where I could snap my fingers and I'd have resources. Mm-hmm. I never needed to go to job fairs when I was, you know, at my former district. You know, mm-hmm. just if someone whispered they were thinking of changing grade levels, I'd get 50 resumes in interoffice mail.
Wow.
To a place where in the greater Atlanta area, there are several great school districts. And mm-hmm. then this one is languishing. It was a real challenge. Every school's got challenges. They all have different challenges. You know, when a school is operating at 90% proficiency, sometimes it's tough to make the case for why we should go after the next 10%. Mm-hmm. At my school, it was the exact opposite. Our clientele was 95% free and reduced lunch, 95% poverty, way too worldly for their ages. Mm-hmm. Lots of parents who weren't ready to be parents. Mm-hmm. It was a tough situation. So convincing staff that there was a brighter day ahead was a real challenge. And mm-hmm. I would say, the trench I was in was made up of literally having to put school culture fires out, safety fires out every moment of the day. Wow. While trying to keep my eye on the ball. You know, it's tough to talk about how this is going to be a great school when you are literally there were days where I ranked fires where things that might be deemed terrible and unacceptable at one school, I had to allow so I could get to the three other things that were even worse. And so getting that culture turned around was I would call it an extended trench. It was an extended trench time. And I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for it. And it was hard. it was challenging. It was very challenging.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those experiences that you learn from, right? Those hard times make you a better person. They help you grow. And did you start taking an interest in PLCs at work when you were at that school? And how did that help your school then go become a well-performing school?
Thank you. No, I actually took interest in it from my former district. I had no idea who Rick DeFore was, had no ideas what PLCs were. We were all called to this big meeting space where he was speaking, and I took my seat in the back of the room and fired up my Palm i705, mm-hmm. one of the first devices to send email, by the way, and was ready to get lots of work done and not pay attention. But 15 minutes in, he had my attention. Mm-hmm. He had my full attention, because what he made clear was, I'm not going to reduce the 1,105 things that come at you every day, mm-hmm. but I can paint certain things coming at you with neon paint, mm-hmm. and identify for you the areas of culture that require your A effort versus your C effort.
Okay.
And that was great for me. I was a principal in Maryland, you know, my former district. And so it gave me a chance to really get my feet wet. And in Atlanta, it was my saving grace. Mm-hmm. Learning communities was my saving grace, because I understand it organically and authentically. It's more than just identifying SMART goals and putting together norms and meeting every week.
Yeah. So why do you think some districts or schools, individual schools, are able to implement PLCs well, while others, you know, they try it, but they don't really get on board? I've seen PLCs tried to be implemented several places, and then it kind of fizzles.
Boy, oh boy. So I'm going to give you my bootleg PhD answer, which means I don't have a PhD at all. I have no doctoral degree, but I have tons of experience. I've made tons of mistakes. I've gotten some things right. And I have the power of observation. Like, you know, I'm not a researcher, I'm a practitioner, but I see things. And so we're definitely in a phase now where more and more schools are working to implement the process. And that is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I was around when we were just trying to convince people that it wasn't a fad. Like, it's not going to go away in 2 years. This is the way to do things. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple of theories I could put out there. One is, and I'm going to own this as a consultant, you know, because that's what I do. I help schools lean into their collective expertise and create learning for all cultures. So one issue is getting clear on the why. Mm-hmm. And I know too many schools make PLC the why, but PLC is not the why, right? If I do 100 pushups a day to enter an over 50-year-old men's weightlifting competition, the why isn't the pushups, right? Mm-hmm. The pushups is the gratification that I'm going to get from achieving this, the improvement in my physical well-being and my health, and winning that competition. Too many schools try to make PLC the why. PLC is not the why. We got to get clear on what the why is, and that's got to be learning for all. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, because when, you know, I often ask, how do football coaches get players to do these insane workouts and drills sometimes twice a day? Mm-hmm. He's not selling the kids on the up downs and the burpees, right? And the nutcrackers and the weightlifting. He sold them on making the playoffs, having a winning mm-hmm. season for the first time, being the county champions, you know, going to state. Like, he keeps that in front of them. That's their why. Mm-hmm. The push-ups and the burpees and the workouts, that's the how. And so not enough schools get clear on their why, right? They spend way too much time crafting mission statements, and they miss the point of the process, which is to get clear on the mission we're on. Mm-hmm. It's not about the mission statement. It's the mission we're on. You think of the top five companies you patronize because of their ability to deliver service or products. I bet you can't tell me what the mission statement is, but you know, within 10 minutes or within working with them a couple of times, you can pretty much guess what their mission is, because mission's about what we do, not the words we craft. That's mm-hmm. my second mm-hmm. theory. Mm-hmm. And my third theory is, I think often the PLC process is rolled out part by part instead of painting the big picture first and then back mapping to the parts. I did a presentation a couple of weeks ago and I started by showing pictures of very discrete parts of one of my cars. I drive old cars. And I asked, does anyone know what this is? No, no one knows what this is. Anyone know what this is? No, no one knows. Anyone know what this does? No, no one knows what this does. Then the fourth picture I showed was my car. And I said, if I told you that each one of these parts helps to make this car run well, do you think I can make you understand it better? And they're like, absolutely. Now you can go back and explain. I don't think we start often enough with the car, with what PLC is supposed to be about. You know, and I know this because when I ask principals and ask teachers and leaders, you know, what is the purpose of a learning community? You know, with earnest and sincerity in their hearts, I get answers like, you know, we meet every week. We look at data. We talk about students. PLCs at its core is about ensuring mastery of what we deem essential skills and outcomes, essential skills and competencies, measuring every student's progress and ensuring they master essential skills and competencies. And so to know if your PLC is going well, ultimately it's whether or not we're moving the needle on student achievement data. That's ultimately what it is. It's when a fifth grade math team decides there are seven skills and competencies every student's got to master in the second quarter of the school year. And how do we organize to do that? If I went to a team of teachers and said, here are seven things every kid's got to know by the end of 9 weeks, goodbye. They would begin a frenzy, almost like a lab environment. Okay, where are they now? What things do we need to teach and ensure so that they master these things? How often do we check in? What about extra time for kids who don't get it the first time around? And what do we do with the kids who get it right away? They would over time figure out all those things so that at the end of 9 weeks, they are as close to 100% of those kids mastering those seven skills and competencies as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what the PLC process is. And once you understand that organically, all of its moving parts then makes sense. But too often schools, and again, I'm going to own some of this as a consultant, schools, it's introduced by its disparate parts first. Yeah. So schools throw themselves into, we got to create norms. When you do a mission statement, let's do a vision statement. We got to identify these essentials. Oh, we need SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, results oriented, and time bound. We do, like, we check off all the boxes, but we don't understand it organically. Once they have an organic understanding, they can be off and running. And that's become my absolute passion with missionary zeal over the past, I would say, 5 years, is to really help schools understand it organically. Because teachers are putting the work in, right? And like you mentioned, Dana, they're putting the work in, but their results aren't commensurate with their efforts. And that's what I want to do. I want to make that effort, like, produce results. And those results are measurable and observable, and the practices are behavioral. Sorry for going on too long.
No, this is great information, because it tells me, you know, those steps that you need to take and, you know, why it doesn't always work, like you're saying. Right. We shouldn't just focus on the mission of the school. We need to focus on our why. We need to, you know, look at the whole picture as opposed to the parts, like you're saying. And right. I kind of see how that resonates in previous experiences I've had, where you're just kind of looking at the subset of your needs, but, you know, it's not looking at the whole why. So,
right, like, no. Why are we doing this? Yeah.
This was great information. So kind of going back to that trench story, tell me a little bit about a background of a turnaround school that you led, and kind of how that school came out of the trenches and you know, steps that you took with your staff and your community.
Well, you know, I kept 3 years worth of journals. A mentor challenged me to keep, so I have three volumes of these journals that a mentor challenged me to keep. And it's the only reason I kept them is I couldn't let her down. And so I look back and I wish I could say, you know, years later that, yes, we just decided that this was the mission and damn it, this is it. And this is where we're going. And But no, it was a hot mess. It was the Hot Mess Express. And so, you know, putting aside the ridiculous fires I was putting out, it was also getting staff together, because it's, I don't want to make this out to be, you know, a Joe Clark, a Mr. Holland's Opus story where, you know, the single charismatic leader comes in and just saves the day. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works in any school, much less a school that requires turnaround. Eventually, we had to get staff together. They knew where I was coming from. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I learned from my first principal experience that that school is not about following my vision. It needs to be our vision. Mm-hmm. And so we got together. And one of the first conversations we had about really moving our school forward was getting really clear, like embracing our current reality. And we had to get real with it. Mm-hmm. And so we had conversations around, what is it? What do people say about us out there? I mean, the name of my podcast is Bless His Heart, mm-hmm. Leadership Podcast, because my first day at a meeting of leaders, every time I introduced myself and told them where I was the new principal, they, oh, bless your heart. And I thought it was Dana, I thought it was a compliment. Until one lady she laid hands on me. And that's what I knew I was in trouble. So we got together and we had a real honest conversation about what are they saying about us out there. So I would give them scenarios like, hey, if I bump into some parents at the local supermarket, what are they going to say about us? And it was really awkward, but we talked about it. We talked about the perceptions our school had. You know, we were that bald-headed stepchild of the district. We were the school that, you know, the school that everybody blamed for where the district was. People were embarrassed. My staff, they were embarrassed. The perception was, if you were a veteran at my school, someone was mad at you and placed you there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you were new, you just needed a job. So you had no choice but to be there. Social media was just, it was called the Facebook when I was a principal, put it that way, the Facebook. And staff members never put the name of the school online. They always just said a school in the greater Atlanta area. So our first talk was about who they say we are and why we're embarrassed by that. Mm-hmm. And why we're embarrassed when we tell someone we're at the school and people are like, why are you there? And then the next conversation was, well, what do we want to be? Like, what school do we want to become? And so this is another area I coach lots of schools on. You know, we didn't do a vision statement, which is often your mission statement with the school, you know, with the word vision stuck in there. We actually did a narrative. Mm-hmm. We just started talking about, man, 2 years from now, if we're on the cover of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, what's that headline going to read? Mm-hmm. And then what are the five, you know, bylines? If the Atlanta News starts that night at 6 o'clock and we're the lead story, what is that anchor going to talk about? What do we want that anchor to talk about? And we began a vision narrative, which started, I call it a day in the life. Mm-hmm. And we all contributed to it, you know, and I do, you know, specific activities around it. But it started with visitors, parents parking their cars. What do we want the grounds to look like? Right now we got weeds coming out of the cracks of the sidewalk, swiping at your shins, right? And pulling on your tights and creating runs. Then it went into, what do we want people to see when they walk into our school? How do we want them greeted at the front office? I tell my folks, look, they don't take off a half day of work to come tell me the great job I'm doing. They already pissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For you to make them even madder at the front office does not help me. So we talked about that. Then we had visions of, we wanted parents late, 5 minutes late for every parent meeting because the work in the hallways was so compelling they had to stop and read it. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things I like to share, I call this like hood visions, like because it was a hood school, but it's a hood vision. One of our hood visions was we had tons of parents pulling their kids out of our school. We wanted there to be a waiting list to get into our school, one. And then two, we wanted a certain percentage of parents lying about their residency to get into our school. That's wow. Hood. That's hood, kind of hood royalty. You know, we wanted to look at a gas bill and say, now, Dana, we know that's not your, we know you don't live with your grandmama. Like, you got your grandmama's gas bill here talking about residency. We know you don't live with your grandmama. Ms. Goodyear, we know that Dana doesn't live with you, but if she does what she needs to do, right, and doesn't cause any problems, we'll let her stay. You know, we just kind of a wink, wink. Like that, so we started to get excited about that. You know, we had this day in the life painted. It was maybe two pages, just a narrative of what it looks like and feels like, you know, to walk into our school. And then I remember a staff member asking, how long do you think it's going to take for us to become that? Mm-hmm. And my answer immediately was, we become that as soon as we decide. Mm-hmm. As soon as we mm-hmm. decide. If we decide today, then we're going to talk about a handful of practices and behaviors that we're all going to do to make this happen. You know, we went into this era of acting as if we wanted to conduct ourselves like a learning academy. And so it wasn't enough to just create a vision. We needed some things that we could do tomorrow. So one of our small commitments early on was to really speak in civil tones to our kids. Right now, mm-hmm. we were putting them on blast. We're yelling down these long hallways. At the same time, our kids, they haven't had the greatest experience at our schools. They are not having some of the greatest experiences in their neighborhoods and homes. And they're super streetwise. And so they know how to push your buttons too. And so we came up with this, we call it an antiseptic bounce. Like if you saw, you know, Dane, if you saw me and I'm about to lose it on a kid, it's almost like a little tap, like in wrestling, like you tap, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You tap your partner leaves and you come in. It's almost like, I got this. Just ways we could learn to talk with kids. We talked about talking with kids at eye level. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in elementary school. So we tried to keep from, you know, just small things like that, which then led into a real hard look at professional learning communities and our practice. Mm-hmm. And I prefaced every time we talked about a new practice, I prefaced it like this. High performing schools across town, Waldorf Academy, Lakeside Academy, and all those private schools, the high performing school in our district, this is what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so they put their pants on and eat their oatmeal the same way we do every day. So we're doing it too. We got just as much talent. We are high performing in spirit today, mm-hmm. high performing in results tomorrow. We're doing this. Mm-hmm. And so one of the recommendations I make to leaders about working with turnaround schools is this. One, you got to take stuff off their plates. Mm-hmm. Teachers' plates. We are great at the start doing list. We suck as an industry at the stop doing list, right? And then two, when you're talking about engaging them in high leverage best practice, you can't back into it. Mm-hmm. Don't tip. Mm-hmm. You can't. Well, I know things are hard and I know our school's tough and I know like all those. I talked to our staff like they were gifted. Mm-hmm. I spoke to them like they were gifted. Look, if that school across town can do this, like we're going to do it. Who are they? Right. We got the talent here and we're going to develop the talent here. Now, I'm not gonna lie to you. 31 people left after my first year. Wow. Across all stakeholder groups. but that process I just described to you began in our first year. I would say, mm-hmm. probably by November, we started talking about these things. But we had to paint a picture that we all contributed to. Mm-hmm. Mission, being on a mission is about sacrifice. That's what, and I've never looked this up. It's just my bootleg PhD mind. It's how my mind works. I believe mission is about sacrifice. Like people come together for a cause, mm-hmm. and decide, because we're about that thing right there, we commit to doing these five things. Mm-hmm. That makes sense? We all commit to that's really what mission-driven work is about. And so I never looked at this work as authoritarian or me being the leader, supervising teachers. It was about, we are learning for all cultures, a culture, and a learning for all culture, the way schools are constituted, are built on five commitments. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to ensure everyone's executing those commitments. And it's my job to hunt and gather everything teachers need to make this work happen, and staff, everything. That's my job. Hunt, gather, protect, mm-hmm. and defend. That's my work. Sorry to talk so much. I think I'm talking too much.
No, this is great to kind of see the process that you went through and how you laid out that narrative, just kind of the vision, right? To to see it in place, to say it into place.
And you know what? Another thing we did was, you know, because I talked about once I showed those participants the car, I could make those parts make sense. Like I could bring that picture back up and say, this is what this part does to keep this Buick going. This is what this part does. And so the work I did with my staff around vision was to paint the car. Like we did an activity with you would have thought we were at Disney World when I had these small groups presenting, you know, what's the news going to sound like 2 years from now? What's the article in a newspaper? And we acted it out, and I got microphones and loudspeakers, and we were in there. You would have thought we were already a high performing school. And that's the kind of vision that you got to keep in front of people, because the work is hard as hell.
Yeah.
It's a grind. And what keeps you going is remember where we're going to be. Remember what this is going to look like. Remember how a year from now, your bigger issue is going to be the number of visitors coming into the school wanting to see what's going on in your classroom. Like, that's going to be your big problem next year. Ken, you're allowing too many visitors to come in. You're interrupting my instruction too much because they want to see what's going on. Like, that's the problem we wanted.
Yeah.
And we took that vision, and unlike a lot of schools, and in my first experience, you can't have an obsession like that and then put it in a binder and then put it up on the shelf and hope that energy just carries you all year long, because it doesn't. Every single time, my goal as a leader was to use that vision and those commitments as a lens through which to communicate everything. Every time we celebrated, I could back map to our mission and vision. Every time I had to redirect a behavior, I had to back map to our mission and vision. Every time I got called out on something misaligned, I had to cop to the things we talked about in our mission and vision. Every resource I shared, every initiative that came down the pipe, because we were that school, which means the district was sending down any and everything to fix us. And luckily, I could fight some of it off, because that's another huge problem with schools in the trenches, is that they become overwhelmed with initiatives and ideas and things to do. And they got five things going, none of them going well. And then teachers fry.
Well, I've checked out your website. You have a great resource, unfoldthesoul.com. And
thank you.
If people sign up for your mission-driven mindset message, tell me a little bit about what they can expect to receive on those weekly messages. Oh,
thank you. Now, that is a great reminder to me to change that. So it's the same newsletter, but I've changed it to these three things. But it's much the same theme. I send a newsletter out weekly on Tuesdays to, honestly, I send it to me. I'm short attention span. I need to read things in blurbs. I'm not a researcher. I don't like to write. And so I'm just looking to give you just three things to think about around mission-driven work, around anything connected to a learning for all culture. I would say the overarching theme is the talent is in the room. It's with all the challenges we have, breakthroughs happen when educators put our heads together. And so if I had to identify an overarching theme, it really is trying to build, nurture the talent on staff. And so I want to be that guide on the side, that coach on your shoulder, whispering in your ear about the talent you have and how much better that talent's going to be when you leverage with others. And I also provoke. I know I do. That's just my nature. I'm going to poke the bear, not just to poke the bear. I don't identify problems and just, you know, virtue signal that way. I want to help give you solutions, but I'm a big proponent of disrupting the status quo. So you're going to find those two things, you know, helping you lean into your collective expertise because the answers are in the room. And I'm always looking to provoke just a little bit, because if we're not at 100%, then there's always work to do. Let's celebrate, but there's always work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You're never 100% because there's always, you always want to get better. What other resources would you suggest to schools who are looking to change their mindset and disrupt the status quo?
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy. Well, so there's one resource. I mean, it's, you know, of course, I could shamelessly promote my own book, but I'm not going to do that. If you're a professional learning community, mm-hmm. and one of the challenges of, you know, one of my partners, Solution Tree, you know, we put on these conferences every year about professional learning communities, and folks come and they get fired up. But it's often tough to remember everything that was said. And mm-hmm. it's like, man, I can't say that like Luis or Paula or Anthony Muhammad. How do I go back and say it the way they said it, or Mike Maddows? Well, this resource in terms mm-hmm. of building a learning for all culture is unparalleled and unrivaled. Mm-hmm. It's learning by doing. It's brilliant in that it takes the pressure off you having to remember everything that was said. It's constructed perfectly with quick case studies, 2 pages. It's written in informal enough language for mm-hmm. you to connect and understand. Rick, Dr. Bob, Becky, God rest Rick and Becky's souls, along with Mike Maddows and Tom, they've anticipated the pitfalls, the slip and falls. What I tell people is, look, if you're just starting out or you're trying to have a do-over, just submit to it. Just mm-hmm. follow it. It will give you everything you need. If you're in the middle of it and you just need some specific guidance on specific areas, then use it as that kind of playbook. Go mm-hmm. to the chapter on common assessments and go there. There are tons of other resources I can recommend, but almost all of them are born of learning by doing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They, you know, people like my colleagues and friends, you know, Mike Maddows and Austin Buffum and Chris Webber, like they've taken parts of learning by doing and gone deeper in terms of, you know, RTI, Anthony Muhammad in terms of culture, you know, our work in terms, my work with Tom Herc with, you know, mission and an authentic understanding of the work. I'll give you one more resource. I don't have their latest, but I'll, so they've got a new one. They've got a new book mm-hmm. about coaching, but Kim Bailey and Chris Jakusic, they are my common assessment go-tos. They are super relatable. Again, they take complex topics and make it bite-sized and chewable for you. I'm disciples of their work, because how teams handle common assessments is super critical. Mm-hmm. It's just critical. I could go on and on. Yeah. Honestly, I could go on and on with my colleagues, you know, any of the work Mike Maddows has done. I'm a huge advocate of Bill Ferriter mm-hmm. and his big book of tools, Anthony Muhammad and Luis Cruz, Time for Change. I could go on and on. The Hannigans. Now, these folks had me when we were at an event and I was just meeting them, and they talked to me about how they work to reduce suspension rates, mm-hmm. like alternatives to suspension. Well, they had me right, especially at the secondary level. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They had me right there. You know, that when I hear secondary folks advocating to keep kids in school, I'm an instant fan, and they do more than say, like, I'm going to say, kids need to be in school to learn. Kids have to be in school. We can't suspend them all the time, but I don't have any solutions for you either. Right. I'm just, mm-hmm. I'm just blowing hard, but the Hannigans have solutions, and that's what I love. Strategy, solutions, coaching up, and so many others. I mean, honestly, I could go on and on. Jessica Cabine, mm-hmm. it's Jimmy Casas, another partner. It's just, I can go on and on.
Yeah. And I know Jessica Kabeen personally, have had her on the podcast as well. So yeah, I've read several of those books that you mentioned, and I agree, you know, The Time for Change is a great one for school culture, and the learning by doing, you know, just to implement those PLCs.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the podcast. You said that you've recently started your podcast,
yeah,
and it's called Bless His Heart. And how yes. often do you have episodes, and what can one expect to, you know, what kind of topics would you expect to hear on the podcast?
So I wanted to try something different, and we'll see how it goes so far. New episodes drop every Tuesday. So mm-hmm. one dropped yesterday morning, and I want to try something different.
Yeah.
And honestly, this format kind of honors the introvert inside me. Believe it or not, there's an introvert inside me. Believe it or not, but there really is. So I have these journals,
mm-hmm.
and again, I wrote the journals because my mentor left a note inside and said, "You're now a seasoned newbie. In your first principalship, you're way too overwhelmed to keep a journal, but I challenge you to keep one this time." And so I did. I didn't write it with any intent of publishing or podcasting. There was no such thing as podcasting back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are, shall I say, raw and unfiltered, mm-hmm. uncensored. And they highlight the good, the bad, and the ugly of mm-hmm. my journey there. And so the podcast is based on journal entries. What I do wow. is I read a couple of journal entries
mm-hmm.
as written. So there's already like a parental guidance suggested.
Mm-hmm.
That's your warning.
Yeah.
I read them as written. And then I reflect some on where my head was at the time
mm-hmm.
and then kind of bring it forward to, you know, how I might do things differently now or not. And then leave leaders, teacher leaders, school leaders with some things to think about. Like the scenario I read, you know, you may not have had a situation where a decision was made to move the health clinic from the front office where the health clinic was built
mm-hmm.
to a broom closet where there's no running water and close the boys' bathroom and have that be the health tech
mm-hmm.
sink and water and keep the girls' bathroom open. You may not have made that decision and then give the health tech room, which is pretty large, to a staff member, a friend of yours. You may not have, but you may have situations at your school where, in my instance, it was, there was such a void in of leadership that it put my staff in survival mode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On the surface, having drinks, I could have you gasping and laughing for hours. But when I get beneath the surface in the podcast, the real truth is, when there's a void in an area that's necessary in your culture, it's got to be filled. Mm-hmm. And staff members did the best they could. But then after a while, it goes from survival and then it kind of devolves into things that are that benefit adults first, adults most. Mm-hmm. Like the moving the nurse's office literally around, you know, 700 feet away was more about, you know, a personal dislike for our nurse than anything else. And, you know, how to deal with those things. Now, I'm at the very early stages
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of dysfunction junction, but eventually kind of levels off and really gets more into practice and, you know, shaping culture. But that's what you can expect. I read from the journal as written. I reflect on it. I leave you with some things to think about. And then we wait for next week. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea for a podcast, and I will definitely tune in because, I mean, anybody who's working in that type of environment that, you know, is trying to shift, you know, their mindset and, you know, work their way out of the trenches, it's definitely, you know, good to hear kind of how your experience was.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Boy, oh boy. I think what comes to mind primarily is this. The work we do isn't about a mission statement. It's about mm-hmm. being on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
any notion of learning for all is complex, it's multi-layered, it's challenging, it's tough. And that's why we need to be mission-driven about it. Mission-driven about that work. And so I would say that's like the one thing I would want people to remember. Mission kicks in when the math stops working. For all, you know, the quote unquote realists who often ask, do you really expect 100% of your kids to learn? It's a bit, yeah, I expect it. And what's the alternative? Are you gonna, you're gonna give me a list of the kids who aren't? Because if so, let's just go ahead and call their parents and tell them they ain't gonna make it. Mm-hmm. But if we're going for it, then it's gotta be mission driven mm-hmm. work. The statement we come up with afterwards, that's cool. But the first step is to get clear on what our mission is. Mm-hmm. And learning for all is mission driven work. And it works best when we understand the answers are in the room and we lean into our collective expertise.
Mm-hmm. Great. No, those are such great words to live by. And I heard that earlier on the podcast, a collective expertise. Where can people find you and connect with you online?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Of course, my website, unfoldthesoul.com. On Twitter, at unfoldthesoul. And on Facebook, unfoldthesoul. But if you want to get in touch with me regarding anything time sensitive, I'm like your old Uncle Slow, man. Mm-hmm. Email is best. Ken@unfoldthesoul.com. Or if you want to set up a time to talk, it's unfoldthesoul.com/contact.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. It was a real pleasure to get to know you and about your experiences.
Honor and pleasure. Thank you very much.